Welcome to Bring On the Mess, a show where we have real conversations about how to embrace life's messiness and how we find ways to show up and uncover our true self. I'm Beth Ann Dorman, the CEO at For All Seasons.
And I'm Lisa Lee, the Chief Clinical Officer here at For All Seasons.
And it's September.
It's September.
Summer is officially done. We are here with you, and we are going to be talking about a pretty heavy topic today. Mm-hmm. September is Suicide Prevention Month, and so we think that it's really important to bring to light some of these awareness months, because these conversations are super important when we think about the grand scheme of all that we face as a community.
And we know that they're hard conversations. And so we just want to remind everybody to make sure that as you're listening, that you're taking good care of yourself, and knowing that everyone's had different experiences. So whether you are somebody who has been a survivor of suicide, or you are a family member of somebody who has completed a suicide, mm-hmm. that you are aware of how these conversations can be potentially triggering.
Yeah, and we want you to know as you're listening that if you are struggling or you find yourself in a moment where you're triggered by something, we do have our hotlines that are open 24/7. There's also a national hotline. So the For All Seasons English hotline is 410-820-5660. If you have a friend or you yourself or someone who would prefer to be speaking on our Spanish hotline, it's 410-829-6143. And, you know, for years we've had 911, which is like the national I need help and emergency hotline. And a couple of years ago, we have been able to also share out a national hotline resource, which is really simple. It's just 988. And so that's another hotline as we're having this conversation. If you need assistance and maybe you need to pause the podcast and place a call, those resources become available.
Absolutely. So let's dive in a little bit. Bethann, you had a really amazing conversation that I was able to be present for with Dr. Moon, mm-hmm. and I was in the audience listening, and would love to just start off having a conversation about maybe some of the statistics or things that he had brought up, because some of it was a little bit surprising to me.
Yeah, so every year we've done a campaign for the last 7 years called No Matter What, You Matter, and Lisa's referring to our community-wide presentation and a talk back with Dr. Andrew Moon, who works for the Department of Defense, and he specializes in suicide education and helping folks understand the effects of suicide in our community. And so we were really fortunate to have him at the Avalon Theater, which is our local theater here on the Eastern Shore, and he just did a beautiful job of setting the stage. You know, so often when we talk about suicide, we have conversations around situations or people share their stories, but this was really an opportunity to get some facts and some data that set the stage in a different way. And so some of the things that Dr. Moon shared with us is some of the information even from our World Health Organization. And so we know that our suicide rate is 10.6 per 100,000 people. And what does that translate into? Because those are numbers that I can't always wrap my head around.
Right.
But it means that every 40 seconds, one person in the world dies by suicide. In our country, if we bring it home to the United States, it means that someone dies by suicide every 11 minutes. And we know here in the state of Maryland, where we're recording our podcast, it is the leading cause of death for people ages 10 to 14 and 25 to 34. And, you know, the bottom line that Dr. Moon and I talked about was we really need to be having these conversations. We need to talk about it.
I know one of the statistics that was surprising, because I was talking to some folks afterwards, and even as he was saying this, you can hear some of the in the mm-hmm. audience, with particularly that younger generation, mm-hmm. the 10 to 14 year olds. And, you know, a lady had come up to me afterwards and said, "Really?" And I said, "Yes, I'm a licensed clinician." And so there's young kids that I work with that at this point have suicidal ideation. Some of them had made suicide attempts. And so I think that that was a really shocking statistic for a lot of folks.
Yeah, we talk about the statistics with some of our youth surveys that are completed in this region and or nationally. And knowing that one in five children under the age of 15 have thought about and or have talked about some sort of a plan, that's a really big number when you think about our school-age children. And, you know, the thing I loved about the program the other night and our podcast here today is that, and I've said this to you even in preparing for today, some of these topics are things we really need to talk about, but nobody wants to bring it up, or nobody wants to be able to sit in that uncomfortable space long enough. I don't know about you, but I have people in my life who are like, oh, I don't want to hear about that.
Right.
But we need to hear about it. And so the beauty of this podcast and the beauty of that program was that we had those really, the opportunity to ask some of those tough questions and to be able to ask questions that we probably all have thought of, but nobody's ever said out loud.
Well, I think it's also important for people to understand that you and I can have some pretty transparent conversations about this because we've been clinicians for a very long time. We've been talking about this for a very long time. And so the invitation really is when we start talking about it, it doesn't become necessarily easier, but it becomes more familiar and we start to have a language around it. Because I think that for me, that's the one thing that is hard for people is they just don't understand how to have the conversations. And so we can talk a little bit about what that looks like. But to have the conversations is so incredibly important because what the statistics are showing us is that it's happening, whether we're talking about it or not.
And you can pretend it's not. And we can say, well, not in my backyard. But the reality is that we know that when a suicide does take place, 135 people are impacted if a suicide is completed. And so when you think about where you live, whether you're in a community, whether you're in an apartment building, whether you're down a road, 135 people, think about that number, are impacted if there were to be a completed suicide in your life. And so if you think about it in those small numbers, you know 135 people.
Right.
Or we're a part of a group that has 135 people. When I heard that, when Dr. Moon said that the other night, I thought about even Sunday morning at church. There's more than 135 people in my church service. And so if there was a suicide, that entire congregation would be impacted. And it helps to sort of bring to light that we are a part of a smaller community, even if we live in a big place.
Right. Well, there was one thing that when I was sitting in the audience and you had brought up, can't remember really what you guys were talking about, the specifics of it, but what stood out to me was you had brought up that video, and it came out a couple years ago on Netflix, The 13 Reasons Why.
Oh, 13 Reasons, yeah.
And what I think, and I get this as a little bit of a parenting philosophy, and so I definitely want to throw that out there, but as a clinician also, this is how I practice, because if we don't have those conversations with kids, so if your kids are, or neighbors or grandkids, whatever it might be, are saying, well, I want to see this movie, and it doesn't have to be necessarily that movie, but I want to see this movie, they're already talking about it in the schools or amongst their peers. And my philosophy really is, let's get the information from the trusted adult who can give them the right information and have real hard conversations, or I will say uncomfortable conversations sometimes for folks.
Right.
Because suicide is being, I don't know if this is the right word, but almost sensationalized, even in YouTube or in video games.
Right.
And so it is already out there.
Yeah. And so for those of you who might not know what 13 Reasons is, it was a series on Netflix, and it was, I believe it was 10 shows. I could be wrong. Maybe it was 12. But it basically was walking you through a child who committed suicide and sort of the path up to the suicide. And there was actually a pretty graphic image and section of the video where the young girl committed suicide. And so one of the things we know is that in the absence of education, stories are going to be made up. And so what I love about what you just said is that if we're not filling in the story for our children, someone else is going to, whether it's YouTube, whether it's TikTok, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Netflix. And so the beauty of that philosophy, it doesn't mean that we should say to our kids, let's watch this together and you see it for the first time with your child. That's where we so often know that there are films that are produced or television shows that are produced that maybe we need to preview ahead of time. But if your kids are talking about it, having that conversation with them so you can set the stage for the education that comes along with that program is so different than your child seeing 13 Reasons, having no conversation, letting them be on Facebook or any social media and hearing someone else's perspective. Because unfortunately, for most of our kids, and I'm speaking from the perspective of a mom of teenage boys, if it's on the internet, it's true, Lisa. And so some of it requires us to dispel some of those rumors and be able to sit and have the conversation. And that's where the campaign of No Matter What You Matter comes in. And we have those three simple words that we use, the ask, listen, and share. And it's simply asking the question, are you doing okay? It's listening to someone's response and sticking around for the answer more than just if you're passing through, and sharing out those resources. And that same premise can be used when we're educating our children.
Yes, and I want to parking lot that for a second and circle back to something really quick. And so I love that you said teenage boys, because the other thing is it has to be developmentally appropriate. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying go watch that movie with your six-year-old child, because right. That's not going to be appropriate yeah. for the six-year-old. And right. if you're previewing it, there might be parts that you say, this isn't appropriate for you to see. Let me explain something about mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes images can be really hard. Right. I hadn't seen the series. And so when you explained there was a really hard ending, I'm not sure that that's something that my 11 and 12 year old, I would be sharing with them right. until I previewed it and had enough information about mm-hmm. it. So make sure that whatever you're doing, it's developmentally appropriate. The other thing that I love is when you talk about going back to the ask, listen, and share, you hit it in the very beginning. And this is the hard part, I think, for folks, including me sometimes, is the sitting in mm-hmm. and listening. Mm-hmm. Really listening to what somebody is saying yeah. about their experience.
Yeah, and how to figure out, and this is some of those skills that we talk through with the campaign. One of the things I said at the program the other night was, the difference between when you say to your child, did you have a good day at school? And their answer is, it was fine. Versus, tell me something that happened today that was your most favorite moment. Or framing questions of, how was your day in school different from yesterday? Or did anything exciting happen today that you can tell me about? And really being able to know that sometimes we have to ask questions in a different way if we want to get more than those one-word answers from our children. And being able to know that we might have to reframe the question a couple times and be a little bit of a pain in the butt mm-hmm. in order to move those conversations. And for me, that's with parents too. That's with, you know, partners and spouses too. Sometimes you have to circle back and say, okay, I'm looking for more.
Right. Because it's not really just kids who right. say, I'm fine. And there are, you know, people in our life that might be really having a hard time. Mm-hmm. And we are asking them and we're getting those one word responses, but we know that there's something more there. And so for me, a little of that is, I hear what you're saying and I see your responses, or something just feels yeah. off. Because I know you so well. Mm-hmm. And so there are different ways to continue those conversations, because you're right, it's not kids who are just saying, it's fine, it's okay.
It's fine. And I love that, because that's one of my nuggets that I carry with me a lot, is trust your gut. Mm-hmm. If you feel like something is off, it probably is. And even if it's not, it might be something off in a smaller way than what you're imagining. And our brains all go to different places and we think the worst sometimes, but sometimes it is the worst. And so we have to be mindful that our kids are susceptible to depression and anxiety. And when they're not doing well, we might need to be persistent in our questions, and we might need to stay connected to our kids in a different way and to the adults in our lives. So we might have to circle back a couple times. And we also, in all of that ask, listen, share, it may be that you're not the person who is going to be able to ask the question and get the same response that maybe your spouse or your partner would get from your child or from that family member. So know that while we're asking these questions, it's okay if we pass to someone who may have a different connection, because that is another piece of really being able to make sure that we're showing up in a way that people can open up.
Thank you for highlighting that. So listen to your gut. And what I would add to that is take it serious. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Take it serious when someone says, I want to die, or I don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated when Dr. Moon talked a little bit about those factors of I am a burden mm-hmm. and that thwarted belonging. Yeah. So that sense of I don't belong, or I'm not a part of. And then the ability to say, like, I have a means. Mm-hmm. Those things were really, I just like the way that he framed it. And so I believe it's really important for us to pay attention to that sense of when people are feeling disconnected, which again, by the way, is that middle school, high school, they're trying to figure out how to fit in, which doesn't mean that adults don't have that problem. Let's just be very clear about that.
Right.
And that sense of, I'm just a burden. So if you hear that talk and you're getting that gut feeling, stay persistent. And I really love, Bethann, when you say, I might not be that person that they're going to talk to. Mm-hmm. My kid might want to talk to you to a teacher or to a neighbor or somebody else who can help them along the way.
And, you know, one of the things I think of when we think through these conversations, we were talking yesterday about our podcast and we came across an article and it was sort of the do's and don'ts. And so when we're asking those questions, making sure that we are not setting ourselves up in a situation where someone can say, you can't tell anybody.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you this, but you can't tell anybody.
Right.
And so also when we're having these conversations, we need to make sure that we are leaving ourselves open to hearing what someone has to say. Also knowing that it can't always be a secret. And there's a difference between surprises and secrets. And surprises are great, but secrets can't be kept. And especially if it's someone in your life who is saying, I do want to kill myself, but don't tell anybody. Number one, that's a huge burden for you to carry. But number two, the responsibility that we have is to be able to connect that person to services and to get help and be able to navigate that conversation.
So I would be curious about how you do this. For me, and I've had, whether it's clients like kids or clients just in general, or if it's friends, family, and they'll say to me, I want to tell you something, but don't tell anybody. And my response to that is, I don't know what you're going to tell me, so I can't say that I'm going to do that. And so let's see if we can talk through it and figure out what we'll do together. Because I don't want to get set up already. And it might not be a suicidal thing, but it might be something else. But if it is, absolutely, I don't want to be set up to keep that and not be able to help that person.
So in the past, I have used the conversation around, I'm so glad that you're trusting me to be able to share something. So I trust that you believe that I will make the best decision once you share with me
you're going
to share. Because for me, it really is like a trust thing. You want them to be able to trust you. And, you know, there's times where kids will say, I can't trust anybody. See, I shared and now everybody knows my business. So leaning into the trusting side of it, that I'm so glad you've trusted me to have this conversation. Please trust me enough to know that we're going to make the right decision together.
And here's the facts. That person might be mad at you.
Absolutely.
And that's okay.
Yep.
That's okay. Because that person will be alive to be able to work through the disruption in that relationship.
Yes.
And that's an important thing. But I do like the way that you frame the trust part of it, because again, that is a really important part of the relationship.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that you bring up that the person might be mad at you, and that sort of college students used to say, I guess it's better for my friend to be mad at me and be alive than for me to hold something and have me know that I didn't move in the right direction. And I think the other piece in the reality of this is there's no guarantees.
Right.
In any of these conversations, it's not a straight path. So there could be twists and turns, and there is a chance that in working to help someone find a safer path, you might lose those friendships too. I think that's a possibility too, that I don't want us to be painting this picture that you're going to try these things and it's like this rosy outcome all the time, because the reality is, you might lose a friendship over it. There might be strained family relationships. Even when you're having these conversations, you may still lose someone. There's no guarantee that these skills and tools that we're talking through are going to have 100% success, but it provides you the best possible path to try to divert someone to a different path.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you bringing that up. And I'd also like to mention that since we talked about, so there's kind of two things here. My brain starts to roll. I do want to circle back for a second on the I'm a burden and I don't belong, because part of a protective factor in that, or part of a resilience, if you will, is the sense of belonging. And you talked about, you know, things to say, not to say, and you're going to lose friendships maybe, and maybe that person is alive. So let me say just a couple things to that. One is, if somebody is upset with you, yes, you might lose that friendship and you're going to have to figure out how to sort through that. And that could be very challenging. Two is, if somebody says to you, I am thinking about suicide, I don't want you to tell anybody, and you say, I'm just so glad that you trusted me with this information and sure that our relationship will make it through this, what you're doing is offering them hope, like, mm-hmm. I'm going to help you through this. You don't have to do this alone,
right.
Which is really important mm-hmm. because a lot of times when we're talking with folks about suicide, that there is this sense of hope that they need and the sense of belonging. And so those two things can be helpful. Mm-hmm. The last thing that I want to say, and I know this was brought up, and I don't know if you're going to circle back to any of that, but the last thing that I want to say, and it was brought up, is we can do everything we believe is right, and we could still have that person complete a suicide, or mm-hmm. that person can still complete a suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a struggle when we have these conversations in the community and when people say, I did all of it, and they still took their life, or tried everything that you're telling me and I'm not getting through to these people or the person in my life. And that's the hard piece, because none of this provides a guarantee.
Right. We could say all the right things that we believe are the right things. We can get them help, and I believe the hardest part about suicide when I am talking with survivors is this sense of, what did I do wrong? What did I miss? Mm-hmm. What did I? And it leaves us in a place of the not knowing. And so our brains just inevitably make up a story about the why or the what happened with this situation.
Right, because I think you bring up a great point about the sort of our brains fill in the story, because our brains are designed in programs for answers. And so in the absence of answers, we have to make sense of something that purely just will never make sense. This is not something that A equals B equals C. That's not how this works. And so knowing that there is going to be a grieving process, and it may take time. And I say, when working with our sexual assault survivors, the only guarantee is there's no guarantee as to how your days are going to go. And it can be a roller coaster. And you may have someone in your life who has experienced a suicide of a loved one and may be fine for 5 or 6 years. And then maybe they're not okay. Or maybe it's a couple of days or a couple of weeks. So recognizing that, holding space for folks, because that unknown is really hard as we are grieving. It's not as simple as, someone had cancer, we knew they were going to die, and this is what happened. And that isn't even simple in itself. The suicide is something that we're not going to be able to make sense of.
Right. And there's some things that I know that some folks that I've worked with, and they've made some attempts to suicide, and I get the privilege of working with them, and they share their stories of things that worked and didn't work. And I know that there have been places, whether it's saying to the person who has completed a suicide or even to a family member who has lost somebody through suicide, is that person is selfish, mm-hmm. that person's not thinking of their family. Mm-hmm. And those things are just not true. When I've talked with folks who have attempted suicide, they think that that is truly their own option in that moment.
Their only option.
Their only option.
Yep.
And it's not about, I'm here to cause pain to my family mm-hmm. and I'm out to get people. It is truly, I don't know what else I can do.
Yeah, I think that's a really important piece, because there can be some of that, along with guilt, there can be that anger, there can be sure. that frustration. And that piece is well sorted through. And when we are thinking that we've got to figure out the answer, we might not be able to rationalize why someone believes it's their only option, but we have to be able to let them live in their truth.
Right.
And knowing that on the other side of that, and I love when you're able to say, I work with folks who may have attempted, but you're still here to work through
right.
the
right.
next phase. And that's where we want to make sure that we are bringing someone that seen, heard, and valued piece, so that mm. we're hearing their story, we're seeing them for who they are, and they're valued as a community member, and knowing that it doesn't always have to feel like this.
Right. And maybe in wrapping up, you brought up something, and I know that this was or is the campaign about community, and that we all have a role mm-hmm. to play in preventing suicide. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you see the community wrapping around, because there was some really good question and answer stuff that came up in the
Yeah, our campaign this year is we all have a role to play. And whether it's us sitting today and talking and you all listening to the podcast or having a conversation within our family or within our friends, you know, the reality with mental health is it affects us all. And when we talk about it, maybe you decide your role is to just simply have a conversation. Maybe you are feeling inspired and you say, hey, you know what? I want to go and volunteer on a hotline. I want to go and learn more. Maybe I want to volunteer with an organization in the community. Maybe I want to work with our young people and see what's happening in our schools. The piece that I think is so important is that we do all have a role to play, whether it's supporting someone who's experienced a suicide, whether it is supporting the community so that we continue to put preventative measures in place so we can work on the suicide rate and lessen the number of kids that are impacted. Or maybe it's just simply, I say all the time, maybe we just need to be kind. Maybe we
it's
just
so
need,
funny that you just said that.
Sometimes it's just about being kind and taking a step back and giving people the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. And when a child is or an adult is treating someone unkindly, maybe we just step in and say, maybe that person just needs you to be kind today.
Right. Well, and I think the other thing that somebody could do is if they're hearing all those things that you're saying, certainly you can extend some kindness and some grace for anyone that maybe they know is going through a hard time and is talking about suicide. Maybe it is grace or understanding for a family member. And again, that has completed a suicide because the grieving process is so challenging. Mm-hmm. Not saying dismiss it, not saying that you should just get over it by any means. It's about maybe your role is saying, I'm going to learn to work through this or understand it in a different way.
And I love that because that also allows us to know that our experience might not be somebody else's experience. Right. And we can't go in judging a situation that we've not maybe been a part of. And so being able to say, I'm here to learn, I'm here to be curious if you want to share, or I'm just here to simply hold space, because I think that's the other piece of it. So we know that this has been a topic that is in the media and we see articles from time to time, but we want you to know that in your community, if you are here on the Eastern Shore, if there's other places where you're listening from, there's mental health services available. And certainly we hope that this gives you the ability to think about the impact that we can all have as community members on really bringing to light information around suicide, playing a role, ask, listening, and sharing information with folks. And I want to revisit that 988 is our national suicide hotline. So whether you're listening now or maybe later in the day or at all this week or whenever, if you are finding yourself needing to reach out, please do not hesitate to reach out to that national hotline and know that there are resources available. You are not alone. And sharing our story and having folks to sort of hold those stories and ask questions may just be the path that you need. Have a great week.